Grandstand.
You're listening to ABC Grandstand's Hens FC.
Hens FC.
On ABC Local Radio.
Welcome again to Hens FC on ABC Grandstand. We're going to get into the nitty-gritty of some of the sporting topics of the week with a great panel. I've got Lisa Stiker, the former Australian women's cricket player, Shannon Byrne from ABC Grandstand, and Jen Browning, a sport reporter from ABC News. But we might start with Lisa, because you're the star among us, Lisa, let's face it. And you've been on the show a few times. It's always great to have you back. Welcome.
Thank you. Always nice to be back.
Now, we'll leave alone the men's cricket, the loss of the Ashes and all the drama that's gone with that over the past week, but tell us a little bit about how the Australian women's team, the Southern Stars, are shaping up for the Ashes. They start tomorrow night, our time, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They actually had a practice match against the England A women's side and did extremely well. Meg Lanning peeled off 100. Elise Perry was on a hat-trick, and Jessica Johnson, left-arm orthodox spinner who's coming back from injury, picked up 4 wickets. So they had a good chance to get out in the middle, get used to the conditions. Some of the players were saying that the conditions will be similar to the Wormsley pitch that they'll be playing on Sunday. And everyone's just gearing up. It's not very often that they get a chance to play a test match.
I should mention that we do have a broadcast on ABC Grandstand website tomorrow night when the match starts. You'll be able to follow the commentary. The BBC are doing live commentary on the test, the women's test, and you'll be able to tune into that live streaming on the ABC Grandstand website. So if you're keen, definitely log on and enjoy that. How are you feeling though, Lisa? This is the first time they've been away without you, isn't it, this since your retirement?
Yeah, it is. My boss actually gave me a hug one morning and I said, are you okay? And he goes, are you okay? The team flies out today. And I said, oh yeah, they do too. So yeah, it is a little bit different. A few of my friends have said that I've got phantom tour pains because I'm staying up late and I'm texting the girls on WhatsApp and a few emails flying. So maybe, you know, I'm getting into the English summer, getting ready for the test, even though I'm on the other side of the world.
And any regrets? Were there any pangs of like, oh, I want to be with them?
No. Especially when this morning I was down at Balmoral having a nice breakfast in the sun, whilst I'm sure they were cold in England and being forced to do some training and some sprints. I think I'm pretty happy with my decision.
Okay, that's a nice positive way of looking at it. Can you tip us maybe someone who you think will be this might be a breakout tour for amongst the Southern Stars?
Yeah, I think with the bat, Rachel Haynes, she performed extremely well during the World Cup recently in India. I think that she'll play well across all formats and, you know, we'll have an opportunity hopefully to play in the T20 side as well. From a bowling point of view, Holly Firling kind of exploded onto the international scene during the World Cup, you know, 17-year-old tall, fast bowler. We haven't seen a lot of her, but I think that she's going to play a key role in the team's success.
All right, well, we'll look forward to the Women's Ashes, and of course it's being played in this sort of new revolutionary format of one test match. It's three one-days and three T20s.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll follow that as it progresses over the next month or so. Shannon Byrne from ABC Grandstand, familiar voice, familiar face. I can see the face. What are you wrestling with there, Shannon?
I'm trying to put something on silent.
Oh, you're trying to put your
what's, yeah, because you guys keep tweeting and it keeps going.
Oh, does your thing tweet make a noise when
yeah.
I tweet? Oh, okay, all right.
might have to get you help me turn that off.
Yeah, move it away from the microphone, maybe. But so you've got heaps of things to talk about. But I imagine you're pretty pumped up about being on the boundary tonight for Collingwood and Swans.
Yeah, look, second versus sixth. I think anybody gets excited in terms of, you know, the higher they are in terms of ranking, because, you know, the quality of the game that's going to be there. But I think also tonight the rivalry between the Swans and Collingwood has been so sort of different. In 2005 and to 2012, I think, you know, Collingwood dominated 11 in a row, and now it seems that Swans have won the last two encounters, and obviously the big one was last year in the semis in the actual final series, and then they went on to win the flag. So then they get a one in round nine, and now we're back here. So just in terms of, sometimes when you get to look after some of the big teams that are travelling along nicely, it gets pretty exciting.
And Collingwood really sort of sent out a warning bell quite loud and clear last weekend, by the way they demolished Essendon.
Yeah, look, and so they're going to come in with an unchanged team. They did, but I mean, on the other side, you've got to look that they played a team that has a huge amount of distractions off the field. So at some stage, they're going to slip up in terms of their preparation wasn't right to meet a team like Collingwood. So, you know, I think, yes, it was a good confidence booster that the Magpies needed at this time of season. Whether we can say too much about their opposition at the moment in terms of their headspace, jury's out.
All right, well, and I guess the decision will be returned later this evening and you'll be on hand to see it. Shannon Byrne, he'll be on the boundary tonight for Sydney Swans versus Collingwood. You'll be able to listen to it 7:30 ABC News Radio. And Jen Browning from ABC News is with us again. Jen, I'm so jealous. You told me you're packing to go to New York for the US Open tennis.
I am. I'm taking a month's leave from work, which is a little bit scandalous towards the end of footy season, but I'll be back in time for finals. And yeah, I'm going to the Big Apple for a month, which is very exciting. And I'll be going to spending 2 weeks at the tennis at the US Open. So I cannot wait. So hopefully we'll get to have a chat maybe on Hens over there. It might be the middle of the night, but always happy to talk to you. And I'll be doing some work on Francis's program as well on ABC Digital, the breakfast show. So.
Okay. No, I think the New York time zone works quite well with this program. I think it might be about 11 o'clock at night. Well, yeah. And if you're at the US Open, there'll still be action going
be great.
At that stage.
Not that it feels like winter outside today, but it's very exciting to be saying goodbye to winter and going to summer.
Mm. All right. Well, Jen Browning, Shannon Byrne and Lisa Stelaker, our panellists today on Hens FC. We'll also have an interview guest as usual coming up, someone from the world of women's sport. And it's Nicola Zagami, who was one of the players in the water polo team, the Australian Stingers, who got the silver medal at the World Championships in Barcelona recently. We'll talk to her in about 20 minutes. But as usual on Hens FC, we're going to stick our beaks into what have been the main sporting topics of the week, and I think the men's Ashes series definitely one of the talking points, and we'll get into that in a moment.
Get your children reading with ABC Reading Eggs. This fun educational website is a great way to prepare for school or help your child catch up on their early reading skills, and it really works. Parents have noticed a real improvement in their children's reading ability. You can start your 5-week free trial at abcshop.com.au/readingeggs. But hurry, as this offer ends soon.
You're listening to ABC Grandstand's Hens FC.
Hens FC.
On ABC Local Radio.
Here we go. They're going to go off. Clark's very unhappy. The bloke who just landed from Mars or Venus.
I know.
This is the most absurd situation in terms of sport. This is a game. There are a lot of people watching, listening. There are three blokes in white coats standing around the middle of the ground. The lights are blazing. It's not raining. What on earth are you doing? Why aren't you playing? Yeah, you're so damn precious that you can't go out and have a game of cricket.
We talked in the first hour of Sports World about the fact that bad light had stopped play when we expected rain to be the culprit. Well, it's arrived.
Well, it had been threatening to arrive. I think, to be honest, for the last 3 days, I'm amazed that we got this far into this test match without seeing any rain, but it's coming down very heavily now.
Australia's Ashes hopes have been dealt a blow, with bad light and rain robbing them of 30 overs play on day four of the third test at Old Trafford. England were dismissed in their first innings for 368. In reply, Australia's 7 for 172 in its second innings, a lead of 331.
Unbelievable why he's reviewed that. Absolutely stupid. That's a useless review, isn't it?
David Warner was promoted to opener in Australia's bid for quick runs and scored 41, revelling in the opportunity.
Bresnan runs in ball short, pulled by Warner out to deep square leg, and he's caught. Caught by Root, a nice catch that. It's hit hard and relatively low, and there's no half century for Warner, who's out for 41. I think that's a Root call rather than a Warner boo. Although I'm not sure David Warner can necessarily tell the difference.
Yeah, hooked another one to Rudy. It was, yeah, of all the people on the field, it's quite comical now. I'll just wait to read Twitter a bit later.
We played very well this test match. I think the whole team did a wonderful job. Winning the toss probably helped on that wicket as well. All of our batters did a great job, and then our bowlers bowled exceptionally well and started well again today.
Graham Swan's tweet about the weather got a few retweets around the world. Swan did show his sense of humour. Many times I've cursed the rain in Manchester, but today I would like to take it home to meet my grandma and marry it.
We should retain perspective. You know, we've been bagging the Aussies so much. This is the battle of third versus fourth in world cricket. We're fourth, England's third. South Africa and India are one and two at the moment. In this match, we played like a team ranked third or fourth. You know, we've been playing like Bangladesh, let's be honest.
I could see a pathway for Australia that in time they can develop back into a really good test match team.
Breaking news, a scandal is emerging tonight from the Ashes that will have far-reaching and potentially damaging implications for international cricket.
The ICC is investigating the use of a silicon compound or tape down the edge of cricket bats during the current Ashes series.
Kevin Peterson sort of gets nuttier by the day.
The ICC has dismissed reports it's investigating the use of silicone tape.
So I'm confident that we can continue to move forward. We can take confidence from this test match with both bat and ball. And as long as we turn up in Durham with the same attitude and play with the same intent and positive approach, I believe we can continue to play the brand of cricket that you've just seen over the past 4 days.
Well, you've got to admit, cricket is one of those sports that just keeps giving in terms of topics. How many were in there that were
never dull?
Never dull. And there was so many issues. And obviously, our go-to woman on this particular topic is going to be very much Lisa Stelaica. And I want to start, Lisa, with where we started on the tape was the bad light ending play early. I mean, as it turned out, it didn't really make much difference because the rain came the next day. How do you feel about this new situation where the umpires, and as Jim described it, the lights are blazing, there's people standing around and they're leaving the field?
Look, cricket is a very traditional game. The rules and regulations have been there, you know, for over 100 years, yet we haven't seemed to change that to adapt to what modern cricket is. You know, we've got lights. I agree with Jim. I don't understand the reason why they're not playing. You know, it is a summer sport and you know, if it rains, it can be quite dangerous. But if the lights are blazing.
And the batsmen want to continue.
And they want to continue. And they're the ones facing the balls. then I don't see an issue. It shouldn't be up to the umpires in that regard.
Yeah, so in the past it always was that the umpires could offer the batsman the light, and if the batsman said, yeah, well, look, yeah, we're feeling we can't see the ball properly, then they'd go off. But now the combination of floodlights and, you know, okay, it's not the same as natural light, but it wasn't dark either. So that is something that, I don't know, it just, you know what seems to me weird is that the players have to call for a review and they've only got one for the DRS, and yet they can't call for the light. The umpires just take that on themselves. It's just like everything seems to be the wrong way around.
Yeah, they've got to have a little book out. What can I actually call for? Can I actually go off to the toilet? Can I not? Can, yeah. You know, so I think they need to start to review those type of things. Majority of the grounds, I think all of the grounds that they're now playing test cricket on have lights. And yeah, cricket is a game for the spectators as well. So you've got to keep that into consideration. And if there's a possibility that they can continue because of lights, you know, being shone down, then that should be the case. You know, Cricket Australia talking about even, you know, a test match.
Test matches,
yeah, which is exciting. And so we've got to start looking at that.
But isn't it like a little ironic that we're talking about the tradition of cricket? Yes, we love the tradition of cricket, yet it just gets so muddled with technology in terms of lights, the DRS. It's like they just cannot deal with or work out quickly how to incorporate it and have the fine rules, as you mentioned. It's a very, very confusing thing that they just don't be able, they just don't seem to be able to cope with technology full stop.
Yeah, I don't think they need to get rid of the technology, but it just, I think the whole process of using it needs to be refined. And like, if the DRS was supposed to wipe out the Howler decisions, it hasn't done that. And that's not always because of the actual video review person. A lot of the times, of course, the players are calling for the review on the wrong instance. So what I mean is, all that's happening is it's as Lisa says, the rule book, it's getting more and more muddled, and instead of helping, it's actually just confusing. I just don't understand why the third umpire can't just tip off the on-field umpire and say, look, I think we might need to look at that again. It's not like a game where you have to stop to look at a replay. I mean, the game is, you know, steps, yeah, between balls.
The bowler's walking back. That gives the third umpire plenty of time. I think the reason for the DRS is to get rid of the Howler, yet we still seem to be having the wrong mistakes. And by giving it to the players, the players use their emotion. So a prime example was Watson. I think I was on the TV and I think I tweeted something, please do not review it like that's plumb. And I think the players are going, well, no, I'm a key batter, I'll use it because if
but
I stay...
Not, yeah, but that's not what it's for.
Correct. So they need to be educated, well, especially the Australian team, because they haven't used it correctly. But I also agree that the umpire should be able to have a couple up their sleeve. So if, for instance, the players have gone through theirs, you still get rid of the Howler so that there isn't an issue at the end of the day.
And you shouldn't focus, okay, so if, you know, don't give the power to the batsman facing, but don't give the power then to the poor young person at the end of the other crease, thinking they're trying to work out if they're going to creep out of their crease, how far, what, you know, how many runs they can get if it goes, you know, to the offside or the off, but because then, it, you know, now they're saying, well, the person at the other end of the crease should be either nodding yes or no, refer that. I mean, that's a huge, another added bonus of what they do not, you know, they're not concentrating on what they're doing.
Yeah, well, prime example was with Chris Rogers, the full toss, and Khawaja, because Swan was coming around the wicket, it was standing so far to the left that he's not directly, yeah, you know, in front. So how is he supposed to know?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to be such a difficult situation that I think ICC need to start reviewing, you know, how many reviews can they have? How many do the players have? How many do the umpires have? That type of thing.
Maybe I'm being a bit simplistic here, but I just sort of wonder why you challenge an LBW decision anyway, because if you've missed the ball, you've obviously misread the position on the pitch or whatever. You're not reading it well. So to then sort of push the blame back on the umpires misread it, to me, there's not a lot of LBW decisions that are howlers in the way something with a thick edge that goes to first slip is a howler. Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, that's just me. Jen, you've been very quiet here. Which of the topics from that little grab bag of the week in cricket?
Well,
I should add before I go on, by the way, the only way is up was not a bad theme, because we've got England 9 for 238. It's stumps after day one of the fourth test. So that is that's the good news. But
it's a shame that the third test wasn't the first test. I think if that was the first test, things would be because Australia seems to be really starting to hit its straps. But I coincidentally was on late shift the other night as we saw Ken Sutcliffe's tweet go out. Big breaking news to rock the cricket world. Everyone was wondering, what is this? Everyone tuned into Channel 9 to see what this big story was. We were sucked in to the Silicon Gate. And as we've seen, the ICC has said that they're not investigating it. I was quickly on the phone to Jim Maxwell, who made it very clear that it wasn't illegal. You could put Vaseline or vellum on your bat. You could do whatever you wanted as long as you didn't make it bigger or made it out of something other than wood. And so that was put to bed very quickly. But what was interesting, I think, about this story was the fact it was a non-story that then became a huge worldwide scandal. We've seen Peterson's tweets. We've seen he's very angry with the whole story. He said it was horrible journalism. It's quite incredible that the story that really was a non-story has become such an international story. I just think that's incredible.
It's a little funny though, because I feel that it has united the two captains are both coming out saying,
yes.
Look, they're obviously talking at different times, but they're both like, this is just rubbish. I don't want to talk about it anymore. And even, you know, Clark said, this is quite funny that we're even talking about this. So while there's all these negatives that we could list on probably two pages, the funny thing is this is actually probably the two captains are coming together on one thing going, this is just outlandish. How dare you call anyone a cheat in this game at this for that? And then the other positive I'm finding out of this is that the Aussies are actually being called humorous from the, you know, we've got better press conferences and we're better people and we're better talkers in the press conferences from even the English media. You know, when Warner comes out and we kind of are, I think, are getting painted in a better light now that we've had the first test was, you know, so bad. The second test we probably could have won apart from weather. But now everyone's kind of warming to, well, we're handling ourselves really well.
Yeah, I guess that is an improvement. There doesn't seem to be the tension in the team. Do you think the reordering of the batting lineup might recreate some of that tension? Lisa, do you think Dave Warner should be opening or Shane Watson?
Oh, look, I've always said I think Watson needs to be an all-rounder. Obviously, his bowling is really vital for the Australian team's success. And by opening at the top of the order, bowling and being first slip, I think it's too much and his body wasn't able to cope. So I think actually slotting into, you know, the traditional number six all-rounder position is good for him. It's just, I think he's always thought, and I think a lot of the batters, Australian male batters, get caught up with, I bat at this number and my average is great, so I should bat there. Well, if you're the best batter that we have in the team, normally they bat at three or four. For instance, Clark should be batting at four. So I think they need to get over their egos and what how they're actually scoring their runs and say it doesn't matter where you bat in the order, you should still be batting the same way.
Did you ever go to a coach and say, move me up?
I have said that, yeah. I've said that, you know, as an off-spin bowler that kind of got into the open teams as a lot, you know, I was batting at, I think the first time was 10 for Australia, and then, you know, I actually opened at some stage three. I batted everywhere, but, you know, I found a spot that was comfortable for me, and that was around 4-5. So there were times I was down at 6-7. I said, what do I need to do to bat higher? But that's the question I ask, and then it's up to the player to produce those scores or whatever they want.
Not why are you not picking me there?
Yeah.
What do I need to do?
That's the difference.
Shannon, you were talking about the way the players are sort of behaving a bit better or just projecting a more positive image. I actually, despite the fact that I've been critical of him in the past, I thought Dave Warner handled the Joe Root thing really well, and the fact that the crowd were absolutely giving him the razz as he went out to bat, he seemed to quite good.
Well, you've just got to think, maybe is this all because of Darren Lehman? You know, something he has done to this team within the last couple of weeks. He's not had much time with them, but they just seem to be so much more relaxed, confident in what they can and can't say. So he's obviously been given a license just to, not say certain things, because we know Warner can say things, you know, good or bad off the top of his head at any time. And I just think it's a really good side to see some of the larrikins in our teams actually having a giggle or not being serious all the time, but being respectful. And, you know, I don't know what Darren Lehman has done in this last couple of weeks, but it has united them and also just made them more, I think, relaxed.
I think that Dave Warner, what he showed that I liked was the fact that he could kind of laugh at himself, make a joke at his own expense. And I think there's been a bit of that lacking in the Australian team in recent years.
And I was just going to say, a lot of the times when players go through things like what David Warner's been through, they shut down, they block the media out, and they're quite difficult to deal with. But I was really impressed. He was asked a lot of hard questions in that press conference. I know a lot of people used the Joe Brute line, and that was great. And he said, you know, of all the people on the field, it had to be him. But he did answer a lot of questions on what had gone on, and he was really honest in answering that, said he learnt a lot of lessons and was really open, which I think won him back a lot of fans, especially in the media world as well.
Yeah, so that was interesting. But the other thing that I thought was interesting was the negative reaction, and I noticed Shannon Byrne shook her head when it came up, the Graham Swan tweet. What did you think where he said, oh, many times I've cursed the rain in Manchester, but tonight I want to take it home, introduce it to my grandmother and marry it?
Well, I think it proved that they knew they were on the rocks. They knew that Australia was probably going to win. And it was such a shame. We were all sitting up. They took three for early on that final day, and then the rain came down, and it was just, I just wish you could come back and play the next day. It's not fair, because we might have won.
Test cricket doesn't make sense at the best of times, does it?
It's not, they should have just come back and played the next day, but I don't think we'll ever change that.
Shannon, you weren't amused?
No.
We are not amused?
Look, amused, but just, I think I was just more devastated that, yes, he was that excited that the heavens had opened. And that was more, I was just like, yes, I was shaking my head going, yes, they love the weather that much because it can mean
dictate
that they retain the Ashes. And for us, being, I guess, people, you know, especially any sports in Australia, we love to see, one, a fair contest, and two, we love to see an outcome. That's what I feel anyway.
But I thought
you
we
hate
loved,
to be robbed.
I thought we'd love to see a sense of humour as well. And I've said it before on the show, Graham Swan is one of the funniest men on Twitter.
He's cheeky.
I wasn't shaking my head at his tweet. I was shaking my head going, that's how much he loves sorry weather, because they've won the Ashes off the weather.
Somehow I don't think in the middle of an Australian summer we'll probably get a washout, but...
Not like in Manchester. Well, that's been great talking about the Ashes and the fact that things do seem to be on the way up. And, of course, you'll be able to listen to the test tonight on ABC Grandstand after. You can listen to it online, and then we'll go back to the cricket at Chesterley Street after the football tonight. And don't forget, the women's Ashes start tomorrow night, and you'll be able to listen to that through the Grandstand website. You can also stream Hens FC through the Grandstand website. You can replay it later on, or you can get it through iTunes. And there's also a replay of Hens FC at midday on Mondays on ABC Grandstand Digital. Next up, we're going to talk to one of Australia's very successful water polo players.
August 10 to 18 is National Science Week, and marine scientists need your help to explore the seafloor. All you need is an internet connection, and you can be a citizen scientist observing the fascinating life in our oceans. Just go to scienceweek.net.au to get involved in this important project and win prizes. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. So dive in and start exploring National Science Week.
On ABC Grandstand.
You're listening to ABC Grandstand's Hens FC.
Hens FC.
On ABC Local Radio.
Online and on Grandstand Digital.
Debbie Spillane, we're the great panel today on Hens FC. Lisa Stalaker, the former Australian Southern Star, that is a former Australian Test cricketer and international cricketer. Shannon Byrne from ABC Grandstand, who's been good enough to drop in on her way to the boundary line for tonight's Collingwood versus Swans match at the Sydney Olympic Stadium. And Jen Browning, who's cut off her packing for the US Open tennis. Everyone's off to do something really interesting except me. I'm here in the studio, but Jen Browning, we will definitely...
Oh, hold on a minute. What's Lisa off
to
do?
Yeah, what am I doing?
She's done that. She's done the exciting stuff.
I was just checking.
Oh, well, were bragging about being off at Balmoral this morning anyway, whatever. You'd be looking forward to listening to the cricket.
I'll be tuning in tomorrow night, that's for sure.
Yeah, so, Jen Browning, we will take you up on the offer to talk to you from the US Open Tennis in a couple of weeks. But now we're going to talk to someone who has just arrived back from Barcelona. We heard a lot about the World Swimming Championships that were on at Barcelona, maybe not quite so much about the water polo, but we should congratulate the Australian women's team because they took the silver medal at the FINA World Championships. They were beaten by Spain 8-6 in the final. Nicola Zagami was one of Australia's players and she's on the line now. Hi, Nicola. How are you?
Hey, I'm really good, thank you.
When did you get back from Barcelona?
We got back 3 days ago, yeah.
So what's it all been like? Do you sort of wish there'd been a little bit more recognition, perhaps, of the silver medal?
Yeah, I think because water polo is a bit of a low-profile sport, we don't really get as much airtime as, like, swimming and, you know, diving and stuff like that. So a little bit, but we got a little steal on Channel 9 News, so I'm pretty happy about that.
Fantastic, and there was no silicon involved.
There was no what, sorry?
Silicon, sorry. I'm just... Oh. Just a reference to something we were discussing a bit earlier.
Oh, so, okay.
Tell us a bit about... Oh, I've lost the panel. They're all falling over now. The 8-6 loss to Spain in the final. Tell us a bit about the game.
Oh, it was crazy. Nothing like I'd ever played in the sport before. The Spanish crowd are so noisy. And I think... You know, there probably would have been maybe 2% Australian supporters. The Spanish team are a really good team. They've played together since the Olympics. They've only got one different player since London. So they were just good in defence, really. We couldn't get our shots away. They were blocking them left, right and centre.
Nicola, it's Shannon from ABC Grandstand. You mentioned there that they had only one different player from their time back in London in August.
Yeah.
What about the Australian side, where we, you know, we must say we've had pretty good 12 months. We claimed bronze at that. How's our team, I guess, in this World Championships and then maybe looking forward to Rio, how we can hold everyone together?
Yeah, well, we only have 6 girls remaining from our London team. So we've got 2 new goalkeepers and a lot of new girls coming up. And you know what? We're in a really good position. We came away with the silver now. So if we can hold the new girls together, we're only going to get so much better. So it's looking good for Rio.
It's Jen here from ABC News as well. Just obviously you're aiming for your first World Championship gold since 1986. It was obviously devastating. But do you think you've built on your performance in London?
I definitely think we've built. Saying that though, like, you know, the year after the Olympics, a lot of international players have a year off and stuff like that. So, we've definitely, you know, come together well. But I still think our team last year at London, if we were to play the exact same team this year, I still think last year would have won just because of the fitness and strength and stuff like that. But, yeah, gradually over the 4 years, you get stronger and fitter and, you know, you gel together more as a team. So, yeah.
Hi, Nicole. It's Lisa Stelaker.
Hi, Lisa.
Just wondering... Now what's ahead of you guys? And, you know, from a training point of view, have you guys figured out some of the areas that you need to work on?
Well, leading up to the World Championships, defence was our main focus and we really pulled that together really well. So I think now, our attack let us down in the finals. So I think that would be the focus into the future. We have a few weeks off now. I think maybe 2 weeks of nothing and then, you know, another 2 weeks of just gym and like a few swim sets and stuff like that. And then we've got a few camps at the end of the year, a tour in December to America, and then next year's World Cup. So pretty much straight back into it in a month's time, full training.
Nicola, it's Jen again. Obviously, we've seen so much spotlight being shone on the Australian swimming team. Did you guys mix with them much? And what was the vibe you guys got, you know, in terms from London till the World Championships?
To tell you the truth, we didn't really see them at all. We weren't staying at the same accommodation as them and our water polo took up like the whole 2 weeks of the World Championships. But they came, like a lot of the swimmers came to watch our final. I noticed them all in the crowd and, you know, wearing all the green and gold. So I think, like, you know, we didn't have that many swimmers come to our games in London, but there was a lot of them there in our final. So, you know, I think they've pulled themselves together. Yeah.
Nicola, I'm just going to ask, it's Shannon again, a question about, you mentioned there sort of all your training and travelling that you've got coming up. How do you juggle that with part-time work, but also just looking at your uni course, the medical radiation science, diagnostic radiography, how do you seem to manage such a huge workload in the pool and out?
It has been a bit of a struggle for me over the years. So I dropped down just to doing uni part-time. So I've got one more semester left now, so I'm going to knuckle down this semester and just get it all out. But my uni's been really good, and so have, like, my coaches and stuff if I've got exams that I need to go to and have to miss a session here and there. It has been hard, but I'm kind of used to it. Like, I've grown up like that, so I just am good with time management, I think. Yeah.
And how long do you expect to keep playing at the international level, Nicola?
I definitely like to go to Rio, so, you know, another 3 years. And then we'll see after that. Yeah, just re-establish after Rio, I think. I'm only young still, so I could go for a third Olympics, but we'll see.
It's Lisa again. Word on the street, I've heard that you're the hardest thrower within the team. Is that correct?
No, actually. There's a girl in our team, Ash Southern, and she was actually recorded in Barcelona. They did a study, and she was recorded to have the hardest shot out of all the girls at the World Championships. So, yeah, Ash is the big guns in our team.
Literally.
But, yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, Nicola, talk us through your lucky rock that you take with you to competition.
Oh, my gosh. I got that in New Zealand on my first international tour when I was, like, 14 years old, and it lives in a little crocodile key ring, and the mouth zips open, and my rock, it has a name. Its name's Carla, and it lives in there, and I just... Yeah.
This is the rock's name. What is it?
Yeah, it's Carla. I don't know why.
Carla.
It's so random. But it was there. It was there in Barcelona.
It's not that random. It's actually on the website in your profile. So that's great. We love it because in terms of your superstitions and that, whatever's working for you, please keep that rock in your pool bag right up until Rio and further on. That's all I can say.
I will.
Nicola, before we let you go, do you have any sporting heroes and are they in water polo or do you perhaps sort of admire someone from another sport?
This is a bit ironic now, but growing up it was Lance Armstrong, but, but also like a lot of the girls in water polo who I'd grown up idolising, I then have played in teams with, so it was really like the older girls who I've looked up to, like those like Mel Rippon, Beck Rippon, Kate Gitzer, like all of those girls who ended up being my teammates in London, yeah.
All right, yes, it's good to have a replacement for Lance Armstrong, definitely. Yeah. He didn't have a lucky rock, obviously. He resorted to something much more hardcore than a lucky rock. All right, well, it's great talking to you, Nicola. Congratulations again on your silver medal at the World Championships, and hopefully we'll hear a little bit more about the Aussie women water polo team over the next couple of years.
Yeah, thanks, sir. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
If the destination is your imagination, then your journey starts at ABC Arts. Listen to Where It Takes You.
He was a child prodigy on the piano. His father.
Watch Where It Takes You.
There's so much going on around the corners and in the background.
Yeah. Read Where It Takes You.
You feel as though you're being taken into something very secret and still and private.
Feel Where It Takes You.
Art which claims to take on the status quo.
Your journey starts at abc.net.au/arts.
ABC Grandstand.
You're listening to ABC Grandstand's Hens FC.
Hens FC.
On ABC Local Radio.
Online and on Grandstand Digital.
Nicola Zagama, the water polo player's lucky rock, has prompted a bit of merriment here in the studio. And I was just asking Lisa Stelaker whether she had had any teammates at any stage that carried around some odd kind of lucky charm. Did you?
No, well... In our junior state teams, there's one girl that carries around a cow pillow, and she hugs.
Thank God it's not a pill.
Yeah. Well, she lands on strong. Sorry, guys.
Yeah,
sorry.
Too soon.
Pillow, and she takes it to camps, trainings. Yeah.
Cow pillow? Can you paint us a picture, Lucy?
It's like a bag and a pillow in one. You know, I don't.
Like a neck pillow?
Not a neck pillow. Like an actual like square pillow. And, yeah, she's quite happy to hug it at training, and she's about 17.
Oh, bless.
Bless.
Yes. Bless. Exactly. Country girl.
Says a lot.
I wonder if Nathan Lyon.
I'm a country girl. I don't have a cow pillow.
No, only because I wonder if Nathan Lyon then has a cow pillow, being from Young, you know, all the way over there. But it's interesting, isn't it?
It is interesting.
Did you actually have a superstition in, you know, like Rafael Nadal does not step on a line, and when you know that and watch him, it's quite comical the way he makes his way to the chair. Did you have something, you know, like to?
No, it was more like a routine, just normal routines. I thought, look, if I'm going to get out, I'm going to get out. So it doesn't really matter what I do.
Fair enough. Now, we're going to look at a topic that didn't get a lot of coverage this week in the news, but it was something that caught my eye and it just seemed to be begging to be included as a Hens FC topic. I've actually put this one up on the Grandstand Facebook page. It's the top earners in women's sport, and very, very keen to get your feedback on what you think of the list and maybe who you'd like to see being the biggest earner in women's sport. But let's first take in the story.
Forbes magazine in the US has drawn up a list of the world's 10 best paid female sports stars, and 7 of that 10 are tennis players. Russian-born, American-based Maria Sharapova tops the list with earnings of $29 million US dollars between June last year and June 2013. Sharapova brings in $8.5 million more than world number one Serena Williams. Chinese tennis star Li Na is third with earnings of more than $18 million. Victoria Azarenka, Caroline Wozniacki, Agnieszka Radwanska and Anna Ivanovic are also in the top 10. The woman with top earnings from a sport other than tennis is American NASCAR driver Danica Patrick. She comes in fifth with $15 million for the 12-month period. Korean figure skater Kim Yuna and golfer Paula Creamer are the other two non-tennis players on the list. There's still a wide gulf between the top earners in women's sport and their male counterparts. Tiger Woods is the highest paid athlete on the planet with earnings of $78 million for the past 12 months compared to Sharapova's $29 million. Both get around 80% of their money from endorsements rather than winnings. Behind Tiger Woods on the men's list was Roger Federer with just over $70 million and basketballer Kobe Bryant, who made nearly $62 million in the past 12 months.
So, ladies, what do you make of that list? Jen Browning, you're off to hang out with all the big earners in women's sport when you go to the US Open later this month.
Well, all I can imagine is if Tiger Woods had some lollies in his name, just how much money he would earn. But Maria Sharapova, as we've seen, she is always in the magazines. She's on the front covers of magazines all around the world. She has a lot of different brands that she endorses, as well as her own Sugar Pover, I think it's called, her candy that she sells as well. So obviously a lot of the endorsements are what's driving her. Interesting that so many of them are actual tennis players. I guess we've seen this year our Australian female cricketers are going to be able to earn more money than ever before, but whether or not we ever see them up in the 29 million range is yet to be seen. But I guess just the fact that these international tennis players are, you know, marketed so well is probably why they're up there. And Tiger Woods, interesting, he's back at the tops, first time since October 2010. So obviously his indiscretions didn't cost him too much money.
No, but he's...
And he hasn't even won a major.
He hasn't won a major for 5 years, and he's struggling at the US PGA at the moment. What struck me looking at that is that I think in the men, third and fourth were Kobe Bryant and LeBron James. No women's team sport people in there at all. Did that hit you, Shannon? No, not really?
Not in terms of this discussion, not really. Mm. I mean, to be honest, I mean, this discussion's been around for a very long time. The main difference for me is just to see how much, when you look at the women's list, how much growth they've been able to earn in, say, the last 3 to 5 years. No one would be struggling over $10 million that they'd be earning maybe 5 years ago to 10 years ago in women's sport.
So you take heart from what you're seeing in the women's earnings?
Correct, in terms of the jump. I mean, Maria Sharapova earning $29 million, that is a huge amount of money for the progression. Is the gap ever going to close? I don't think so, because we can have this. Lisa's probably the best to explain it than me, but, you know, we're looking at stars that where they're international brands. You know, Sharapova covers the globe, basically, in terms of that's why, you know, her major clothing and shoe brand are on board with her. Li Na comes from China, where there's 1 billion people. You know, they've now moved into that marketing area because she could make so much money for the women of China. So you've got to look at these people and where they are placed. I think the great news, too, with NASCAR driver Danica Patrick is now fifth. That's a huge jump for someone in motorsport, and I think the sport will actually be probably gaining a lot from that now someone can be a millionaire in the sport of NASCAR for women.
What was your reaction to the list, Lisa?
Oh, look, it's no surprise that tennis players are up there. I think the fact that you've got your Grand Slams, which, you know, played alongside the men, all media kind of focus on that one tournament, and, you know, a lot of the spectators enjoy watching the women's game more than the men simply because, you know, there's more rallies, it's not just a power game. That's the exciting thing. And, you know, tennis, 30 years ago was struggling, and look at the massive jump that they've been able to make, and the fact that the prize money can now be the same. That's probably the biggest difference is, you know, if you're a male player or a female player, the prize money for winning certain Grand Slams or tournaments are the same, where that wouldn't happen anywhere else.
How comfortable are you when the discussion comes up about women's and men's cricket being paid? Like, how comfortable are you with that question?
The comparison.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I mean, from my point of view, it's all relative. You know, I was able to be part of the Australian team when we didn't have to pay for things, whereas, you know, a couple of girls before me had to. So everything's relative. Obviously, the men travel, you know, 11 months of the year, the broadcasting rights, all of those things that generate the money is what they're doing. We haven't had the opportunity, but I think we're getting there. And I think similar to you, Shannon, about the amount of money that the women are earning, you know, over the last 4 or 5 years, same type of thing with all women's sport is I think it's slowly starting to be increased in the general public and awareness of what's going on, and sponsors will get on board of that with that.
You know what still bothers me about this list, though? You get someone like Anna Ivanovic at number 9 in the world. I mean, she has not been playing good tennis for some time, but she's a good-looking girl. And that's the frustrating thing is there are people like Petra Kvitova who've won Wimbledon, Sam Stosur. I looked and Ivanovic is about 15th or 16th in the world at the moment, and yet she's right up there in the earnings.
It was like Anna Kournikova. She never won a
title. Maria Sharapova hadn't won much, and, you know, she would have been in the list way long before she won her first major.
There was a year where she out-earned Roger Federer in terms of endorsements, Maria Sharapova. So I guess it depends on how hard you work on that endorsement side of things.
I'm interested just to ask Lisa your opinion. Just recently, Steph Gilmore, Elise Perry and Sally Fitzgibbons have all kind of been in the media spotlight for having to do some, you know, they were, Elise Perry and Sally Fitzgibbons were on the front page of the paper in their underwear. Steph Gilmore's in this controversial ad. What is your opinion of, you know, endorsements and the lengths female sports women have to go to get endorsed?
Yeah, look, it is a shame that we have to go down that path. You know, people were talking about, you know, a naked calendar. I think the Matildas did one. They were saying that about cricket. I said, well, then I'm retiring. yeah, it's a shame that we have to go down that path. I think the main thing that most of the female athletes want to talk about is their sport. You know, how I performed on field or, you know, in the beach, on court. That's what they want to talk about. But at the end of the day, they've got to pay their bills. They've got to create a certain brand. And you know, it depends what they're willing to do, I guess. It's up to the individual.
And I guess how is that environment then when you've got someone in your team that is a lot of media focus, they're getting all the sponsorships, they're getting all the attention and other people are struggling or just getting match payments. I guess, you know, that's one thing you've got to think of. It probably could turn into a toxic environment, you know, if it's not managed well.
It could, But then you've also got to look at the fact that, you know, Elise Perry is so marketable. Wherever she goes, people are willing to talk about it. Like, for instance, this Ashes series, just the lead up. We've had some things in papers, on the television, that never would have happened before. You know, and the, Elise Perry has copped probably a bit of criticism from the soccer girls that, you know, when the World Cup was being played, that she shouldn't have been in the side, and that, you know, there was so much interest about her. But if she wasn't there, would the media have gone there?
Mm-hmm. So it raises the profile of everyone.
It does raise the profile. And I think players need to understand that and realise that each person has a role in improving the profile of the game, whether that be on-field, off-field, media, sponsorship.
Discrepancies in earnings in team sports across the board. In men's sport, it can be an issue too. It's just a matter of managing that you know, I guess managing the team work side of the thing. That's why coaches and managers have such a tough job sometimes when somebody's getting paid 5-10 times as much as the guy alongside them or the woman.
Yeah, but usually the base salary is pretty good.
Oh, that's true, but that doesn't necessarily, the ego that goes with the somebody's being paid that much more than me. But anyway, well, let's leave money for a moment and speak to Niamh Owens about what's coming up on Settling the Score. We're moving from the bank accounts to the score. What have you got for us, Niamh?
Thanks, Deb. It's getting to that great time of the season where we've got finals starting in the Country Rugby League and Rugby Union comps. We've actually got a couple of grand finals to talk about this afternoon. Two Rugby Union grand finals, one in the Mid-North Coast Southern Comp, one in the New England Comp. We're going to talk finals with Castlereagh Rugby League starting theirs, Illawarra Rugby League starting theirs, as well as Group 21. And we'll have a good yarn about the New South Wales Cup and the Shoot Shield. They're both getting to the pointy end of the season, as well as a bit of sailing this afternoon, Deb, and wheelchair rugby union. So we've got lots to have a chat about after two.
That's Niamh Owens, who will be your host for the next few hours after the news at 2 o'clock, Settling the Scores, everything that's moving around New South Wales in sport. She's got it covered. Now we're going to have to move quite quickly because we've got 5 minutes of Hens FC left, and this is the new quickfire segment where we just try to touch on some of the other topics that have been in the sporting news this week and ask the panellists to give us a pecking order, at least what they think was the story that impacted the most or affected the most, interested the most from this lot.
West Tigers coach Mick Potter says he feels he's done enough to see out his 2-year contract at the club. Despite reports Potter was facing the axe, the West Tigers board has indicated he will remain in the head coaching role until the end of 2014.
Mark Webber says there are many things he will miss about Formula One, but Red Bull teammate Sebastian Vettel isn't one of them.
Great news for Sam Stosur this morning, winning her first title in nearly 2 years, her first title since that US Open success. She took out the Carlsbad Open in San Diego, beating the world number two, Victoria Azarenka. And it's the way she did it. She won 6-2, 6-3. And that's her first win over a top 10 player this year.
A female jockey has died after falling in race 6 at the Darwin Cup Carnival this afternoon. Organisers decided to abandon the race meet after the jockey's fall. Simone Montgomery was riding Rio Grande when she came off in the straight. She was treated on track and then taken to Royal Darwin Hospital in a critical condition. The Darwin Turf Club announced her death late this afternoon.
One of Major League Baseball's biggest names, Alex Rodriguez, says he'll fight his unprecedented 211-game ban for doping.
Okay, so there's a little batch of stories from this week. Jen Browning, which one grabs you the most?
I think it'd have to be Sam Stosur in the build-up to the US Open. Very exciting. That was her first win over Victoria Azarenka in 9 meetings. So, and she did it quite convincingly. It's just amazing that when she's on, she's on. When she's having a bad day, she's having a very bad day.
She unfortunately, she had one in like Toronto this weekend.
The other day. So I hope that she can take that win and go into the US Open and progress well into that. Obviously, also, I did a bit of rugby league this week, and Mick Potter, whether or not he's staying or going, we saw last night that the Tigers lost again. I guess it's just these stories come about. When a team's losing, there's a lot of pressure on the coach. When a team's winning, the coach is, you know, it's the players. So who would be a coach? But Mick Potter, I think it was very interesting that he came out and spoke the other day about it and was and spoke to the media. He was didn't really want to talk much about it. He said, "I'm confident I'm going to keep my job. Whether you want a 9 or a 10 out of 10, that's yet to be decided." But it's just an ongoing saga. Coaches.
Yeah.
Who'd be a coach?
Got a lot of sympathy for Mick Potter. Shannon?
Mine actually is the female jockey, Simone Montgomery. Coming from Darwin, I realise the prestige around the Darwin Cup Carnival. I had friends and I told people to go up to this carnival that were there for their first year. And then the news that were filtering through, the tragedy that happened at the track, for me, the impact on the family, which is a well-known racing family, then the impact on the Darwin Turf Club, and then now, I guess, the whole community. For me, it was the impact of that, and obviously the sad news that someone died in the sport that they love. Yeah. And then also, probably on the same, again, an impact is the A-Rod for me, that he's actually been found guilty and will have to sit out a lengthy period. The impact that that's going to have on, drugs in baseball.
Yeah, Lisa Stelaker?
Oh, look, for me, anything to do with drugs, we just seem to have a lot of our sporting heroes. We heard Lance Armstrong earlier before, and there's just so many allegations going around. It's disappointing to see, so many of the top professionals choosing to use, illegal substances to improve their performances. Mm. And for young players, people that look up to them, and he would have thousands,
one of the
millions,
biggest names.
Yeah.
And baseball's not a good sport, not a sport with a good record in dealing with doping, but that looks like it's turned a corner. Well, we're going to have to turn the corner and fly the coop. That's the end of Hens FC for this week, and I say it was the Simone Montgomery story for me. When I was growing up, I so desperately wanted to be a jockey, and I think, when you're a kid, it looks so glamorous riding around those beautiful horses, but it's one of the most dangerous sports, and it's a sport where women have really made a lot of progress, and unfortunately somebody pays a price, and that was Simone Montgomery this week. Thanks, Lisa Stelaker, Shannon Byrne and Jen Browning, for being our panel on Hens FC today.